At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
And he's got to go to Middlesbrough and get something. And I'll tell you, honestly, I will love it if we beat them. Love it.
Yes, everybody, what is happening? This is Stephen Elson. This is The Warm Down. And today I am joined by Adam Boltwood, who, actually, I think the both of us thought this would be you having a bit of a crow this week.
No, I wouldn't have said that. No, I said before the game on the Front Free podcast, great podcast. I said if we had Harry Kane, we were going to win. If we didn't have Harry Kane, we're probably going to lose. And then on Friday, of course, the news broke. So I wasn't feeling too optimistic. But watching the game, I was like, that's going for a draw. A point's decent enough. I think it was more the way we lost that was disappointing. But you know, that's how it goes. What are you saying?
Nothing about the fact that you had a striker that was fit on the bench and you came and played without a striker. Mourinho would be absolutely murdered for that.
Heung-min Son, I think, has played striker many times before.
Come on, mate, he's not a striker. Man City. I think he's an excellent player.
We did it against Man City last season when Harry Kane was injured. It worked amazing.
He's not a number 2-0, 9, is he? 2-1
at home. Huh?
He's not a number 9, though, is he?
He's not, but I think him and Llorente are very different players. And I think Son offers much more mobility and dynamism up front, which is not exactly what Harry Kane would have given us, but it's closer to that. I think it makes more sense for Son to start for us. You can bring Llorente on to try and have an impact off the bench. I think that's his main sort of purpose at Spurs, as it is. Although Pochettino's shown against Real Madrid they can sort of play together, Kane and Llorente. But I don't disagree with Son being played up front. I think that was a good approach from Pochettino, and I think it was working for us. But yeah, it just felt like a defensive lapse, really. Lukaku, that header from Lukaku was fantastic, and Martial, of course, getting around the back, the finish was great as well. But I think a draw probably would have been fair, maybe.
You're probably right. I'm not upset that we won by any stretch of the imagination. Yeah. But I think you're probably right that a draw probably would have been a bit fairer. I thought it was an awful game. From a performance perspective, I thought it was probably a decent spectacle. And I said to you just before we started recording, actually, you know, like, I was happy with the first 10 minutes from United. I got the impression that United was up for it in that first 10 minutes, which I'd not had for like the last month or so watching United, where you're like...
I thought it was really interesting those first 10 minutes. It was obviously a bit worrying for a Spurs fan, because having Lukaku and Rashford up for it looked dangerous. It looked like they were creating chances. I think there was that sort of chance in the first opening spell when Lukaku sort of crossed it in. It was almost going to be a tap in for Rashford if the defence didn't get there. But Spurs started to come back into it. I think we had an extra man in midfield.
Oh, that was a brilliant tackle, actually, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So I think Spurs started to come in. Of course, you had the extra man in midfield. Obviously, you had an extra man in attack with two strikers. And I was starting to think that, you know, we were starting to control the game a bit more. People like Harry Winks and Eriksen, who were giving the ball away so cheaply in the opening exchanges, started to find their feet, started to find their confidence. Well, Harry Winks looked very good in that first half. And I thought in the individual components of the team of Spurs were better than Manchester United's in terms of, you know, the three men at the back. I think our defence, most people would say arguably that's one of the best defences in the league, if not the best defence, specifically central defence. Toby Alderweireld, Jan Vertonghen, Eric Dier was playing in the back yesterday. You had Baye, Jones and Smalling, wasn't it? I mean, if you had to take a choice out of those three, you'd obviously go for the Spurs players, I'd say. But yeah, I think in the second half, again, in that opening exchanges, you started to assert yourselves a bit more. Spurs struggled a little bit. And again, it's just a lapse that sort of gave you the 3 points in the end. But, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think Manchester United needed the win more than us. I know we've spoken a lot on the Front Three podcast. You've probably spoken to death about the whole negativity around Mourinho's tactics, be it justified, be it not. But there was this narrative around Mourinho and a lot of criticism for the way he played at Liverpool. And I think that win sort of puts an end to what was a pretty bad week for Manchester United. Well, maybe unjustifiably. But the fact is,
there's a lot of narratives in the Premier League at the moment. One is that Sky Sports tweeted this afternoon, is this City team the best Premier League team ever? I'm not even going to ask you to answer that, because obviously they're not, right? The fact that they've not even won the league.
They've done that for the clicks. They don't actually think that they've done it for the clicks. You can't even say that right now, can you? Because
they haven't won the league. Like, you've got teams in there that have won, United teams that have won three back-to-back titles. You know, three consecutive titles twice. And in that little three consecutive titles, both times we won the Champions League as well. How can you even... how can you say they're better than the Leicester team that won a title?
You can't. Do you think there's some sort of... Are you of the opinion there's some sort of agenda against...
Agenda?
Manchester United.
Yes. This is what I was building into. So there's obviously the narrative around Pep. There's a narrative around Klopp, where they're refusing to criticise the fact that he's won like 2 out of 10 games, which is shite. There's a recent narrative appeared about Pochettino. The fact that they was comparing him to Fergie yesterday, when you think, hang on, Fergie broke the monopoly in Scotland. Can you even wrap your head around how impressive that is? He won a title with St Mirren, I think, and then he, first division title, and then he goes to Aberdeen, I think in his second season, wins a title, and then he wins 2 back-to-back a couple of years later, breaking the Celtic Rangers' complete monopoly that they've got.
Monopoly, yeah.
Wins a Cup Winners' Cup against Real Madrid with Aberdeen. Come on, you can't compare that. And obviously, it took him a few years to get stuff to going at United, but United, when he took over, dipped down to like 13th or 16th or something crazy like that. Mm. Now, I appreciate what Pochettino has done. I think he's took you to this level.
Yeah.
But you've been at this level now for a few years, couple of years at least. If he was the new Fergie, he's identified what this is missing and bought your Cantona to win you the title. When you look at the sides that have won the title in recent years, you can't deny that Spurs should have won those titles. If he was the Messiah.
Yeah, I know what you're saying. I think that comparison is less Pochettino is as good as Ferguson, and we're seeing that right now. I think it's less that comparison. I think people make that comparison because I think his sensibilities and his style seem more in line with what most people would perceive Alex Ferguson to be about, that attacking football, the counter-attacking football, you know, the relationship he has with the players, etc. I think it's less about Pochettino is as good as Ferguson, as Pochettino almost feels like the next Ferguson in his approach to the game.
But the pragmatism's missing. The thing that makes Mourinho a winner, and the thing that's causing a lot of the criticism for Mourinho right now, is what Pochettino lacks. I saw a stat yesterday, and I don't know if this is a true stat or not. I mean, it was on Sky. I'm assuming it's correct. That under Pochettino or Spurs in the last 30 games against top six teams have won only 3. That's
I think the one I saw was we've got 1 win in 16 against top six teams or something away. Under Pochettino. I think it's away. Why do you think he lacks that pragmatism then? Why do you think he lacks that practicality? Because of stats like that showing that he
I think those stats are kind of evidence that a lot of people decided that a draw at Anfield was not a good result. I disagree. I think that is a good result. I was with Gary Neville and Carragher getting my ass chewed off in front of the nation on Sky the night before that game. Yeah. And off camera, I spoke to Gary about it. And I said, I'll take a draw if it's on offer now. I think I said it on camera as well, actually. I said, I'll take a draw at Anfield. And I don't care how bad their defence is. And I don't care anything like that. And a lot of people have been comparing you guys going drawing with Real Madrid versus United drawing at Anfield. And I've got to just ask you, who do you think plays harder? Real Madrid when Tottenham come or Liverpool when United come?
I understand what you're saying, but I think this is something I talked about with Dave on the podcast. I think I was trying to make the point, because Dave is very much, it thinks it's all been very much blown out of proportion, as I'm sure you've discussed with yourself, that the whole Mourinho thing has been sort of twisted a little bit, because I think there is a desire to, I don't think there's a desire by people in the media and people who are analysing football to portray Mourinho favourably, because he doesn't do himself any favours himself. You know, the whole thing after the game yesterday, the whole shush thing. I don't think he endears himself to people, which is fair enough. That's his approach. I've got a lot of respect for Mourinho, a lot of time for him, because he's one of the best managers of all time. And just because his approach is different from someone else's, and there's definitely differences with Pochettino's approach, doesn't mean he's a worse manager or anything like that. But I don't think he endears himself to people. I think that's why people tend to take a negative viewpoint of his approach, etc.
No, and as a fan, I mean, I met him in the Lowry, and he's got no time for people in there. Like, whereas, you know, you can meet some players and managers and fans, and I've seen Louis van Gaal in the same circumstances at the same hotel, actually. And Louis van Gaal give Jaden a big cuddle, and, you know, he's...
Yeah.
There's a coldness to Mourinho where 100%. You definitely think that he's here to win stuff for him and he's not here to elevate the club. And...
Exactly. I don't think that's necessarily a bad thing, because that's obviously part of what makes him so successful. He's clearly very driven. Mm. He's very focused on his goals. And, you know, just because he's got a different approach doesn't mean it's a bad thing. But the thing I was trying to say today was the way Manchester United approached Liverpool game under Mourinho and the way Tottenham approached the game under Real Madrid, they're both conservative in their own way. The way the team was laid out, the formation itself, the basic foundations was conservative. But I think the approach itself and the mentality that Spurs went with was braver and more adventurous than what Manchester United went to Anfield with.
Have you listened to Mourinho since the game ended, though, with what he's come out and said?
After the Spurs game?
No, after the Liverpool game at Anfield, where he come out and said, and he's right, that we've taken the game out of people's hands in those last 10 minutes quite often this season when they've changed formation to try and chase the game.
Yeah.
And he said, look at his two substitutions at Anfield, because I think people are looking at the result and the performance and not seeing the intent of what he was trying to do. His two substitutions was Lingard and Rashford. On what planet are they defensive substitutions? Mentality-wise, Mourinho said, I was waiting for Klopp to make an attacking substitution to go for the game so the game would open up and then we could start to attack properly.
This brings me on to... So I'm not.
It didn't happen. And I think it didn't happen because we was just shit. And I think people are looking at how shit we was and thinking that that was the plan to be that shit. I don't think it was.
But I think what you said there speaks to what a lot of people have a problem with regards to Mourinho and his approach, is that... It is essentially reactive. Mourinho is looking for how to beat opponents. He's analysing the way they play, he's analysing their philosophies, analysing how they are coming to the game, and he's looking for a way to beat it, which is, again, it's a very smart way to do it. I respect the success he's had with that approach. But at the same time, there's something, it might be a personal thing. I prefer a manager who comes with a philosophy and comes with an approach that they try and instill in their team, and they play on the front foot and they try and impose themselves and try and impose their style on the game, as opposed to saying...
If you look at all the 4-0s we had up until that point, that's exactly what we've done. But when you go to the likes of Anfield, and I'm sure when we go to the Etihad, it'll be exactly the same. That's how titles are won.
I think you do have to be practical, and you do have to analyse your opponent and look for the weaknesses. And clearly that's what Spurs did themselves when Liverpool came to Wembley a few weeks ago. We identified that defence as the weak point. Michel Pochettino set up his team to take advantage on the counter-attack to expose that defence, and specifically Dejan Lovren, who had Torres Drive, I think it's fair to say. But for me, I think... Oops, my phone just went off. For me, I don't think Mourinho has that approach. I understand what you're saying in terms of, you know, you've blown teams away in the first 10 minutes, blah, 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 but those are teams you should be beating at home. Mm. I think in those big games away from home, casual observers, people outside the club, and I'm sure most Manchester United fans would prefer to see Manchester United set up an approach that game in a way where they're going for the win, as opposed to, and a draw is a good result, but I think Manchester United can aspire to more than that. I think
we did, and I think we genuinely did at Anfield. At least I think we genuinely set up to win the game with a plan to win the game, but we was just terrible. And we saw shades of that yesterday on Saturday with the performance against Spurs, where we had 74% pass completion. That's turd. That's genuinely dog shit.
This is, I think, the problem. So I still think that the way you went to Anfield, like Mourinho said himself, he was waiting for Klopp to make a change that he could take advantage of and therefore try and win the game. I understand that approach, but it almost feels like Manchester United were doing so well at the start of the season. As we were saying, they were beating teams 3 or 4-0 at home. It was them and Man City in the title race. It was Manchester's... The title was going to Manchester, full stop. It was one of those two teams. What about we've got Mourinho versus Guardiola? Whereas in the past week, that whole narrative has sort of changed now. Spurs are back in the conversation, I think, very much in the title race, despite the defeat yesterday to Manchester United. But it felt like Manchester United had lost a little bit of momentum in the race when City are as good as they are, the best team ever, as we're seeing in these reports. But when City are playing the way they're playing, and when City are this good, Manchester United can't afford, I don't think, to approach games like that at Anfield, to approach games for a point, because that is, could be the difference at the end of the season between winning and losing.
Maybe. Maybe. I think there's certain things that you're not going to change in him, and that I've just sort of accepted that's the way it's going to be. I'm not going to complain about it every single week, because it's just going to frustrate me and it's a waste of air.
Surely there's other factors, though, because, you know, I think Mourinho's approach does work in certain regards. And like I've been saying this whole time, you can't argue with the silverware haul that he's got. But are there other factors in this? That surely the injuries to Pogba, etc.
Pogba especially, because we've been so shit in possession since... I think he missed one or two games after his injury prior to the international break. I think it might have been one. And we was carried through that game, or two games it might have been. It might have been two. It might have been a European game in there as well. And we was carried through that by some other players stepping up and probably a little bit of momentum. But that momentum ended with the international break, and then everyone came back and we go to Anfield. And we have a poor performance where we're trying to introduce Herrera because he's not played him all season. Herrera's trying to come in and fit with Matic, and they just aren't connecting in the slightest. And that worries me, because I really thought they was going to be pretty good together, and they're just not. There were seven passes between the two of them yesterday. Seven, that's it. That's garbage between your
between
two
your
central midfield
fielders. Pairing, yeah.
Yeah. There was a 1-2 between them at one point as well, so you're like, boom, boom, there's an extra one. So there was only five passes apart from that in the rest of the game between your central midfield partnership. That's awful. And I think we miss Paul Pogba's presence, we miss his ability, and that's what Gary Neville said is... At Anfield away, at these big games and the biggest matches, when there's half a second on the ball too long and someone wallops you, when you've got to put in a good pass, when you've got to use your experience and retain possession a little bit, because I think both teams yesterday, United and Spurs, we both gave the ball away really cheaply. It was such a Sunday league level game in midfield, really, chasing each other down, and the ball play from both of us was just cack, and I don't know how much the conditions played into that. It's probably a factor. You look for a player that can put his foot on the ball, that wants it, and has also got the quality to take it in and do stuff with it. He said that was Scholes. That was what Scholes used to do for them. He would always want the ball in them games. He would always want the ball in those situations. And that's what Pogba does at the moment. And Matic, as good as he's been, isn't that. And Herrera, as bad as he is this season, despite how good he was last season, he's not that either. Mkhitaryan, I can't explain at the moment.
He's not doing well.
He can probably pull off something magical in every single game, but consistency is quite worrying. I think Wan Mata might have been a better option yesterday with the ability he's got on the ball. You know, he's not as someone that likes to run at people as much as Mkhitaryan does. So maybe Mata being able to be an option and just have a bounce pass off every now and then, just to that keep possession. Passing it around your centre half is not football for me, but. But actually holding the ball and preventing the opposition having it just for 5 minutes, just, you know, let's take the sting out of this game a little bit, might have been a nice idea. And I just think once Pogba comes back, supposedly back for the Chelsea game, that could be massive for us. Yeah. Because if, like you said, there's a narrative being built up at the moment, and City went to Chelsea and beat them, and everyone blew that out of proportion. It was a fantastic performance from City, but Chelsea was shit. Proven by the fact that Crystal Palace went there and beat them. And then they struggled to beat Watford last week. So this isn't a vintage Chelsea team at the moment. But if United could go there and have a real marker, beating you lot this weekend and then next weekend go beat Chelsea, you've got to start taking United seriously then.
It changes the story completely, yeah. And I think that's when the momentum comes back as well, because whether the narrative, I think Mourinho has to take some of the blame for his tactics for why this sort of narrative has started to build up. But at the same time, yeah, beating Chelsea, I think it's just going to change all of that. And I think you should, because as you say, they've been pretty inconsistent this season. Morata seems to be struggling again now. He's come back
from
injury.
If Pogba's back and he's, you know, 90% plus, I think we'd probably do, to be honest. It'd be nice to see Lukaku go down and score as well.
Yeah.
What's your hopes, expectations, wishes and wants for the season for the Spurs?
It's interesting because I think, you know...
League Cup win? Oh, hang on.
Yeah, that's gone. See, let's not get dragged into that, but I don't care about the League Cup at all. For me, it doesn't mean anything.
No, it doesn't. I'm not going to pretend our win means anything, but this is a team that has yet to win stuff. Do you not want to build that in?
For me, the League Cup, I don't think does that job. I think if we'd have won the League Cup this season and nothing else, people would, I don't think that would allay any of those questions. People would still be like, well, you're still in the League Cup, you need to win something proper. To build a winning mentality, it's just a League Cup. So I don't think it changes that narrative, as we've been saying a lot in this podcast. I don't think it changes that narrative. But I think for Spurs, I think what people forget, you said earlier, you know, you can't deny that Spurs shouldn't have won the past two Premier League titles. I think people still forget that Spurs technically, and I think in a very real way, are overachieving. I think when you look at our wage budget, I think when you look at the spend as well compared to the other clubs around us, I think what Pochettino is doing is phenomenal. I think it's incredible.
I think you've assembled a fantastic team on the money it's cost you to assemble it. But if you go player for player, and this is my argument yesterday when I was talking to Adam, actually, McCullough, is that, because there's a lot of talk about Pochettino to be an eventual United manager. And my argument is, one, is that record...
I think he'd be perfect for Manchester United.
All right, well, here's my argument, just slightly against it, is...
He's not going
to... At the moment, I would take your 11 and our 11, and I think it's very, very similar, and I'd possibly even put yours ahead of it, just in the cycle of the team at the moment. I think yours is way more settled, and I think just about better. I'm a massive Harry Winks fan. I think he is one of the most underrated players in the league. I think he's absolutely fantastic. Eriksen, Dyer, Kane, Mint. Arguably could do with some belting wingers, but you know, I think you've got a solid back four. The goalkeeper's great. I think you have a very, very good side. And I probably put your side just above the United side as a whole at the moment. So why aren't you winning things when Mourinho's able to win things? Now, obviously, he wasn't in the Europa League to win it. Oh, no, he was. So... You was in the same competitions kind of that we was in last season. You didn't win those competitions. So I think, why are we touting a guy that's got a better team to take us to the next level? Because he's not taking that team to the next level, and that team's arguably better.
Here's the thing I'd say, and I think it's an interesting debate, and I think it's an interesting conversation topic, is that I think for Spurs fans, we're very happy at the moment because in the last two or three seasons, we've all of a sudden been transformed into title contenders. That was something that was never even in the picture, I think. Again, people forget the season where we did finish third, but we're the only real runners-up. We were the only real runners-up to Leicester. No one expected us to do that. We weren't given any chance of being in the title race. People say, you're going to finish outside top four, blah, blah, blah.
Hang on. Leicester nearly got relegated the year before, and they won the title, though.
I know, but it's a crazy freak season. I don't think it's... People focus on the fact that Spurs didn't win the league there, but I don't think you can excuse Arsenal, Manchester United.
No, definitely can't excuse
any of those teams. No, Leicester shouldn't want it full stop. But I think, again, last season, people say, oh, Spurs, they did so well last season. They're going to fall out of the top four this season. They won't be able to do it again. This time we go one better and we finish second. So I think we are always improving. And again, for me, we're always overachieving. When you look at the budget, look at the squad you had last season that won the Europa League. The squad itself, the amount of money that's going into it, I believe last season was the most expensive squad in Europe. So
Surely City's was more.
I think it last season, I think, when you look at it, because people like Ashley Young, Fellaini, they cost a lot of money. I think it was the most expensive squad in Europe. Correct me if I'm wrong, go mad in the comments. But it's certainly got to be up there. Way more expensive than Spurs. I think Manchester United should be at that level. I think Spurs, we're not quite there yet. But what people are so happy about is, yes, now, for the now, we're title contenders. And of course, football's all about now. You're only as good as your last result, etc. And that's why Spurs fans are so delighted. But at the same time, I feel like we've got such solid foundations for the future that you can't help but just be so pleased. Because not only have we got Pochettino, I think we'll be there for a long time yet. I think players like Kane will be there for a long time. Who knows if he's going to be a one-club man, but I don't think he's going anywhere anytime soon. Maybe someone like Dele Alli, you can make the argument that he is. But of course, we've got a new stadium coming, etc. It feels like the foundations for the future are there, that this challenge that Tottenham are making now, being real title contenders the last one, two, three seasons, even though everyone's saying we're going to fall away, I think it will be sustainable and it's going to be something that you see for a long time now. Spurs challenging for the top four. I'd be interested to know your thoughts on Manchester United on the flip side, because of course since Ferguson's gone, it was always going to be a struggle to manage that. What was going to come next? Obviously, with Moyes, it didn't work out. Louis van Gaal hasn't quite worked out. Even Mourinho, there seems to be these sort of issues. The problem with Mourinho, and it's something we spoke about when he got hired so many times, was Yes, he's going to bring success. Yes, he's going to bring titles.
At what cost?
And it's exactly, and it's, but it's something that Manchester United needed almost. But what do you think the future is going to be for Manchester United? Because like I was saying, for Spurs, I'm like, we're moving to the new stadium. Pochettino's going to be here for years. He knows exactly how to build this project and maintain this project. This is for Spurs, this is great. You know?
All I can think of as you've been saying this is Arsenal won the league in 2004.
Mm.
Moved into a new stadium. I'm sure all of these things, there was like, oh, look at who we've got coming through. They've got one of the best managers in the world. Okay, seems, we just went unbeaten last season.
I'd say it seems like the foundations are there. I don't think you can argue that the foundations are there.
No, it's just that...
It could all go horribly wrong, of course. But
I'm certain that, you know, if certain Arsenal-flavoured internet things was around 13 years ago, they would have been saying the exact same sort of stuff. No, okay. I think you make a valid point, and you can only build for the foundation with, you know, with hope in your heart. You're not going to be cynical about what you're doing. You are seemingly doing the right sort of stuff.
So then what are the foundations for Manchester United? Because Mourinho, in the past week, and you know, I'm sure he's saying it for one reason or another, but he's starting to tout these PSG links.
He's in contract negotiations with United. He's just being a dick.
I think even if he signs a new contract, he's probably only going to be there for another 2 years or whatever, 3 years. It's still short-term in a way.
But the fact that he said, I'm not going to retire here, there wasn't a single United fan in the world that was like, wait, what? What do you mean? Everyone was like, obviously. Like,
So I don't have the knowledge that you would have to the extent of who's coming through the academy, etc. What's next almost for Manchester United on the pitch as well as off the pitch. But what are your thoughts about the future after Mourinho? Because it will happen eventually and it will probably happen in the next couple of seasons. Do you feel confident that the club will be able to manage that transition to another new manager?
No.
Do you rather see... No. Yeah, you've probably got every reason to doubt that.
Given what's happened. At the moment, United's under-23s is embarrassingly underfunded and undercared for and unloved. And it's a shame because there's some excellent lads in there and there's some wonderfully talented footballers in there. And they're getting mistreated by the club. They have spent, and they've spent brilliantly, on the under-18s, specifically like 15 and 16-year-olds. United are cherry-picking the absolute dog's bollocks footballers from around the world. And there is some cracking footballers that are coming in. The likes of Chong, Fosu Mensah the year before, Pujmal, the Spanish wonder kid that everybody was after. This summer we've got Ramanazi that's come, Chelsea was after, and Leo Connor was wanted by Real Madrid and United managed to pull him because of the Irish connection. And obviously you've got the likes of Angel Gomez, who's just captained England under-17s to a World Cup win. And today, because this goes out Monday, marks the 80th anniversary of United having a first-team academy graduate in every single starting 11, every single matchday squad since 1937, October 1937. This is the 80th anniversary. So we've got the strength in that. And much maligned is United's academy because City have got a shiny building. But when you look at what's... It's very shiny. They've spent $400 million on it. It wants to be double shiny. But when you look at what they're bringing into the first team, and you've got the fact that, I mean, Jadon Sancho, I've said, might be better than Angel Gomez. He's phenomenal. And when your manager comes out and says, I'm not going to play the youth, right? At the end of last season, that's what Pep said, I'm not going to play the youth. And then all the City fans are like, oh, Sancho had an attitude problem. Dwyer had an attitude problem. Because his manager come out and said he's not going to play the youth, and he's signing five different players that play in his position. Fucking right, he's got an attitude problem.
Yeah, it's interesting it's interesting that, you know, Mendy getting the injury, Fabian Delph has sort of been moved back there.
Yep, and you've got this golden generation of City kids that they're not willing to even give a minute to.
Whereas Spurs at the start of the season, Kyle Walker got sold, and all of a sudden, Kyle Walker-Peters is there starting the game. He's someone who's been on the bench a lot, now he's involved in the first team setup. I think, obviously, you've got a lot of talent there in the academy, but who would you like to see come in as manager to succeed Mourinho? Because David Moyes, I think, was someone who was signed with the idea that he would be a longer-term appointment. Obviously, Louis van Gaal, less so. Louis van Gaal was a short-term appointment. Obviously, he had a lot of success at Bayern Munich. There was the expectation he could come in, win silverware. Didn't quite work out, apart from, I think it was the FA Cup, was it? Mm. Obviously, Mourinho's coming now. The silverware's back. You're challenging for the title once again. It's something they haven't really done since Ferguson left. But would you rather see whoever comes next? It could be almost a Chelsea model where it is always very short term and the manager's there for 2 or 3 years. It's very quick. Or do you rather see someone in like Pochettino who will build the foundations for the future? Because we've seen how much a manager can, the impact they can have. He's transformed Tottenham into title challengers, as we're saying, in his past few years, and he's transformed the club top to bottom, I'd say. Would you like to have someone in like that?
100%.
Would you rather have someone
people
in...
People tell you now, don't they, that?
...in silverware that season?
No, because I just come back from Bilbao, haven't I? Mm. Bilbao don't want to win. I'm sure they do, but you know they're sensible enough to say, like, what would it cost us to try and compete with Real Madrid and Barcelona? Now, United are in that realm of competing with Barcelona and Real Madrid, certainly when it comes to signing players.
Yeah.
But what I love, and it is a genuine love and respect for what Bilbao have done, is that they've gone, success is relative. And
oh,
that 80th anniversary, you can't replicate that. Mm. If Mourinho fucks that up this week, it takes us 80 years to fix that. Can you even wrap your head around that? Like, 80 years. The club's only been in existence for 100 and whatever, 13 or 14 years. Like, 80 years to fix a mistake that someone makes. Like, I don't know if I would want it enshrining into United's, like, club rules the way it is sort of like an unwritten rule at Bilbao that you only play Basque players. But there's a pride to that, and there's no prizes for it. And they make it harder for themselves to do that. But I would love United, we're never going to do it, but I would love United to look to building legacies like Ferguson had and look to building organic football clubs that, you know, maybe we do bring in 30, 40% of our team through the academy, but sprinkle that with the best of the players in the Premier League and a couple of the stars from around the world. And I would love for us to have a club that feels like that organic, because I think... I don't like the model at Chelsea and I don't like the model at Real Madrid. I would rather be giving people time. Like, you know, I wasn't doing fan cams or full-time devils and stuff in the Moyes era. And I was, give the guy time. This is a hell of a job until the Piraeus Olympiacos game when it was one of the worst games of football I ever saw in my life. And I was like, he's got to go. Louis van Gaal, you never see me say sack the man. You always say, you got to give him time. This is a hard job. I mean, Mourinho, like... I'm all for giving time for whoever it is because this job is huge, and I don't think you get proof that this works constantly sacking people. And sometimes you go, oh, obviously, yeah, they sacked someone when he was 15th and then he won the league, and you're like, all right, I suppose that was the right decision. But
I think you're saying there that success is relative. I think that's really interesting because for me, I think it does, you know, it is the rivalry of fans and stuff. A lot of it does boil down to silverware, but for me, Pochettino has succeeded already at Spurs by turning them into title challengers.
Yeah, yes, maybe you're right.
Like to joke about they won the runners-up award and they put in the pressure on trophy. But I think it is relative compared to Manchester United, the biggest, best club in the world. You know, Tottenham, I think they have succeeded. I think what's interesting
problem that we
now
have is that we would, I would love to see us being, you know, this constant producer of talent through our academy.
Yeah,
but that's not good enough. And even if City win the league this year and we come second, there will be United fans that are calling for Mourinho's head. Not going to be one of them, but they're going to exist.
We're missing that sort of like... I love Pep Guardiola. I think Guardiola is the best manager of all time. I love everything he's done with the teams he's been at. I know maybe you disagree slightly, but for me, he's built now one of the best teams that we've seen in recent years. Manchester City, you'd expect them to win the title now. I love watching the football they're playing. It's absolutely incredible. But,
yeah, I'm not going to disagree with you on that. I think that I've said this a few times now. That team last year got a lot of plaudits for fuck all. They passed it around the centre-half and goalkeeper, and that wasn't entertaining for me. This iteration of Guardiola's City actually goes for the throat and is very brave and very direct and kind of fucking breathtaking at times. Yeah,
they should. I mean, but look how much... Of course, they should win the league. Canter now. They've assembled an absolutely incredible squad, but for me it means something less because they've spent 50 million on every single player there and they have created an incredible team. But if Spurs manage to win something this year or next year or the year after that with a team, you know, like Harry Kane, who's come from the academy, Harry Winks, who's coming through now, Carl Walker-Peters might be a starter in the next couple of years, people like Eric Dier and Dele Alli we've brought in, yes, but for absolutely nothing. I think 2 million it was for Eric Dier, 5 million for Ali. I think
you
we've
froze.
Built.
Just turn your camera on off.
Oh yeah, no, you're right. Actually, I can see that I've frozen every time.
Here he is.
Just start that again.
I got the audio. It's just that you.
Yeah, I was just saying that it would mean something if Spurs, what if we could win with a team that we've assembled in that way. Yes, as you're saying, like you'd like it to be in Manchester United, we sprinkled it with big, expensive players. Moussa Sissoko, what a legend. But I think if we could win something like that, it would mean something more than the way City have done it.
Yeah.
And I love that City team. I love Pep Guardiola. But I think it's missing... do they have any Manchester players in the 11 now? Anyone who's sort of tied to local?
I don't think City have had a Manchester-born player in the Manchester derby. I think since Michael Johnson, I'm not sure what year that was. I think that was pre-takeovers.
There's something in this era of football when everyone feels more alienated from clubs and football than ever because of the money in it. There's something beautiful and romantic about having a young local or English player who has been at the club the whole time, has come through the system, understands what the club is about, has it in their heart, like Harry Kane at Spurs, like Marcus Rashford at Manchester United. You know, was it Marcus Rashford I've seen the pictures of when he was younger? And who was that? Was it you?
Lingard, both him and Lingard.
Yeah, yeah. There's something beautiful about that, isn't it? And you guys obviously love Rashford and Lingard because of that, because they're Manchester United through and through. Whereas, yeah, it's something that's missing at Pep Guardiola and City, as admirable as that team is. It's missing a certain romance about it.
I don't know if I've mentioned to anybody, I was in Marseille last week with Evra. I kept that quiet, I know.
Didn't hear about that.
We was talking about connection to fans and stuff like that. So obviously, I did the little fucking about with him on camera, but we spoke for ages off camera, just about football and that in general. And the guy loves, when he says, "I love this game," he fucking means it. Like, he's balls deep in football. And and the way he was speaking about the game and the connection with fans, and we was talking about the fact that some players go to away games and stuff like that, and I said, I'd make it mandatory.
Yeah.
I'd make it mandatory that because there's such a little connection between footballers and the fans that support them at the moment, that it's seen as this massive thing when you get a player that goes to Anfield away with the fans and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Ashley Young does it, credit to that. Rojo does it pretty regular, credit to him for that. Phil Jones and Carrick have done it recently, and they've spoken about how much they fucking loved it. And I think that this disconnect that you have between the players and the fans could be bridged by that. That if it, the first few times that they're going to do it, they're going to get mobbed, and it's going to be awkward, and it's going to be probably dangerous for them as well, so let's be honest.
Yeah, but probably, yeah.
The more that happens, the more that the regular away fans are going to be like, fuck off, mate, just leave him alone. You know what I mean? He's watching the match. And then you're going to get a relationship. And those players are going to feel that connection with the fans, because they're going to feel what it's like to be in the away end when you score a last-minute winner somewhere and fucking arms and legs it everywhere. And they're going to know. And I think that knowing that and seeing that and experiencing that with the fans is priceless. And Evra was mad for that. He said he wants to come to a game with me at Old Trafford in a Stretford end. And I said, for starters, that's not happening. Like, you are so recognisable to United fans. You have to wear a scarf, sunglasses, a hat, one of them fake noses. Like, there's no way you're just going to be able to walk in, like, you know, with his infectious personality that he's got. And I was like, I'd love to make it happen. I don't know how the fuck that happens, though.
Yeah. No, I don't know. But there is, it's interesting, Patrice Evra is obviously someone who wasn't, he's not an English player, he's not a local player. You can still have that connection with the team. You can still have that sort of...
He got us more than probably any other player, especially foreign player, has ever got us. He definitely got us. And I think because... I remember a story about when he first signed for the club, and him and Vidic were shit that first couple of months. And there was a quote from Evra a few years ago when he said... Me and Vidic sat down and went, shit, what have we done here? Like, you know, we've gone in at the deep end here. We're going to have to work hard. And they stayed over the summer and worked hard and did extra training. And Evra said, I went and ordered all the history books I could find, and I read everything. And I asked him about that, and he says, yeah, I even took Bobby Charlton out for dinner and just asking loads of questions. I was like, that's fucking mint.
That's great, isn't it?
So he started to understand what the club was about. He went on the tour in the museum, and he asked the staff, and he bought in balls deep what the club was all about. And I think because of that, and because he genuinely loves football, I mean, it's a catchphrase, but there's truth behind the catchphrase. I love this game. I think because of that, and because he's such an honest character, that it shows. And when he gave his all for us, and he definitely did, we gave our all back to him. And there isn't that with every player. There isn't that with every player. But he was one of the ones that got that, and that's something I would definitely love to be able to experience with other players. And I think that football needs it as well, to be honest, because this disconnect that you don't matter, you know, and you're just an afterthought for a lot of clubs. And I'd love to see that brought back.
Before I go then, because I've got to go in a second, but who's going to finish higher this season than Manchester United or Tottenham?
I think United are going to finish higher. I don't know.
Do you think they're going to finish runners-up, or do you think they could? Do you think they could overhaul City for the title?
I think we finish first or second.
Yeah.
Yeah.
First or second.
I think we're only finishing second to City.
Do you think you can win the league, or do you think City are just too good?
I do. Yeah, I do, because there's never been a champions, I don't think, that I can remember, at least anyway, that's never gone through a big wobble in a season.
Yeah, there will be one moment where City have a patch, yeah.
They're going to have a wobble at some point. It's just how bad that wobble is and how close we're on their tail when it happens. The Manchester derby, you know, if they pick up a draw when they should win and then we beat them in the derby, we're ahead of them. It's not like they're 20 points ahead of us. You know, it's very close. So
I'd say, I think my heart would say Spurs are going to finish above, and I hope they do.
Above United?
Yeah, and I hope they do. And I think again, at the start of the season, a lot of people were saying Spurs were going to struggle to get in the top four. It was going to be City, United, really? Liverpool were going to finish in. Chelsea, obviously.
I might have said that, actually.
I might
have said that over the stadium move, actually. Yeah. But I was kind of right. He was rubbish at home for a while.
But this is the thing. We sort of, hopefully, got past that now with some of the recent performance. Back-to-back wins in the league at Wembley for once. But I think we're going to finish third, probably, because I don't think we've got the squad to cope.
What, so we think we're going to finish fourth?
No, I think you're going to finish second. I think City are going to win. But I think Spurs are in the title race right now, and I don't think they're going to be far off at the end of the season. But I find it hard to see Spurs winning past City and United because you've got the squads to cope. I think you're missing a lot of key players now, Manchester United, and maybe, okay, that is a reason for a little bit of the momentum losing in the past couple of weeks. But you've still got more than enough to cope with it. Whereas if Harry Kane gets injured for Spurs, we're in deep trouble, as we saw against that game. I think if Harry Kane was there, it would have been a different. We would have got at least a point, I think, but maybe even all three. City, if Aguero gets injured, there's Jesus there. Vice versa, if Jesus gets injured, Aguero could step
City
in.
City squad depth, especially in the forward line, is redonkulous.
So I think, you know, you guys will probably finish above us. My head says you're going to finish second, but yeah, my heart says maybe Spurs can finish above, but maybe not. But I think, again, even if we don't, I think there will be a lot of sniping from rival fans. But, oh, you know, Spurs fall short again, blah, blah, blah. But I think there is still progress there. And I'm not convinced that if we don't win the title this season, it's all going to fall apart, which is what a lot of people were saying before this season. I think there still has been progress in the way we've been playing. I think our performances in the Champions League is a massive step up from last season. It looks like we're going to go through to the knockout rounds. We could even finish first.
Tough group as well. Fair play.
Yeah, the group of death. Everyone was laughing, saying Spurs are going to get out of that. But again, I think we've proven ourselves. I think if we can maintain a title challenge to the end of the season and be up there, I think if we can show that there's been progress, I don't think that's a failure in any respect. Because, as I say, Spurs were overachieving. I think next season is going to be the one where it has to be. There has to be a title, or there has to be the FA Cup, or there has to be going deep in the Champions League or something like that. The problem is, it's going to be harder than ever when, you know, next season City are probably going to spend an absolute fortune again. I'm sure United would do the same, and they could. I feel like City are getting away from Spurs in terms of their strength and depth. We're talking about the same with United. I wonder if next season it'll be too far, that gap, whereas at the moment you can probably just about bridge it. But we'll see.
Right, Boltwood, where can everyone go and find you?
You can find me on Twitter at Adam Boltwood, but do come and listen to the Front Three podcast with me, Statman Dave, Lawrence McKenna, Chris Hennage, Nico Morales. It's a great podcast, so I'm told.
Yep, it's on iTunes, so make sure you go and get it. And this is also on iTunes as well. If you've watched the video or whatever, you can also find this on iTunes too. On the Warm Down, it's on its own little thread. So go and subscribe to the Front Three, great podcast, and also subscribe to the Warm Down on iTunes and rate and review both if you haven't already. Boltwood. Be great.
Thanks for having me.
See you soon.
Oh, you're coming down to London?
Yeah, I'm going to come down and see you, I think.
Look forward to it.
Right, man. Nice one. I'll see you in a bit.